Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Semper Tyrannis!
Whoa.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Ridiculous History. My name's Ben.
What was that? Sic Semper Tyrannis?
Yes.
Something about tyranny? Something about a tyrant?
Yes. Thus to all tyrants.
Oh, you're talking about old Johnny Wilkes Booth.
Yes.
When he put one in Abe Lincoln's dome at the old theater production of Our Country Gentlemen? No.
Our American Cousin.
Whatever. Same difference.
You got pretty close there.
Yeah. It was the spirit of it was there. Yeah.
With one of my favorite terrible one-liners in elementary school. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Too soon.
But it's never too soon to introduce our compatriot, our brother in arms, our third half of the podcast. If don't think about the math too much, that's our super producer, Casey Peckram, who is back. You were missed, my friend.
You were missed.
Well, it's good to be back.
How were your travels, sir?
It was a whirlwind, but it was a good time.
Did you not hang out with Nikki Sixx? Is that true?
We did, yeah. I got to high five Nikki Sixx.
Oh wow.
Got to hear some great stories off air that I can't share here.
Mm-hmm.
How is this high five?
It was solid, man.
Good.
And solid high five technique. Yeah.
That counts for a lot. Also, just to be clear, you mean it was a whirlwind and that things were happening in quick succession, not that you were in a whirlwind with Nikki Sixx.
That is correct, yes. It was just a very action-packed few days in the Big Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, in the Big Apple. By way of segue, New York comes up a little bit in today's story. You heard Noel and I alluding to the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln. On April 14th, 1865, the president was attending a play, I think it's My American Cousin, at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. And that evening, while watching the play, he is assassinated by the man you mentioned earlier, Noel, John Wilkes Booth. John Wilkes Booth screams, "Sic Semper Tyrannis." Thus to all tyrants, or thus always to tyrants. And according to John Wilkes Booth, that is what he shouted after he shot the president, in part because it was associated with the assassination of Caesar. However, while we all know, at least here in the States, kind of the story of John Wilkes Booth, what a lot of people don't know is that John Wilkes Booth had siblings.
We've been doing a lot of this lately, haven't we? Like the lesser-known siblings of famous historical figures.
Mm-hmm.
Have we done more than one? I swear we have. We did.
We've done George Washington's brother.
Right.
We've done Jimmy Carter's uncle.
Jimmy Carter's uncle.
Yeah. And now we're doing John Wilkes Booth's brother.
Right. Doing John Wilkes Booth's brother and Abraham Lincoln's eldest son in a sort of a star-crossed, I'm good with that. I'm going with a star-crossed situation where folks from different, like diametrically opposed worlds somehow intersect to make a difference in each other's lives.
For good or for ill,
exactly.
Right? Kind of a Cloud Atlas thing we've got. A
don't
Cloud
get the reference,
but Atlas vibe going
nope,
on.
Don't know it.
I would say the film is imperfect, but
okay.
The book is great.
You're into it?
Yeah.
I heard the film had some really bad accents. Is that a thing?
You know, the thing is, part of the film takes place in the future, and so some of those accents you're hearing are future accents. So there were some silly parts. The one I'm remembering most specifically is Tom Hanks, God bless that amazing man, from his bones to his soul and beyond, has an accent that did pull me out of the story when it's in the far future. They talk about things like the true-true and the big true-true. It's weird.
You know, that reminds me of Battlefield Earth.
Oh, gosh.
You know, they say some weird stuff like that. like you slap happy something or other. Like, I don't know. There's
Isn't
a lot
that
of
based on the lore of Scientology.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Okay. It was a movie that L. Ron Hubbard wanted to get made for a long time, and John Travolta made that happen for him.
Was it Forest Whitaker in that?
Forest Whitaker's in it. John Travolta's in it. What's that guy's name?
Barry Pepper.
Barry Pepper. Casey on the case.
Let's get back to the case of John Wilkes Booth's brother. So we know that John Wilkes Booth was a well-known actor in his time, right? He was regularly landing these lead roles at the theaters.
Was he in Our Kentucky Gentlemen? I'm sorry, Our American Brethren? Cousin. Was he in it?
He was not performing in the play that night, which makes sense because he would have to sneak off stage, right, to perform the assassination. But he was known about the theater scene, right? So he was probably hanging out at this theater and other theaters on a regular basis. His brothers, Edwin and Junius Jr.
I love the name Junius.
I love the Jr. on it. Junius Jr.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I did not even catch that. I was so caught up in Junius. That's brilliant.
I know.
Junius Jr.
Edwin and Junius were also actors, and Edwin was actually more famous than his brother John, at least before the assassination.
Right.
And Edwin Booth was often listed as one of the best American stage actors in history. And our story doesn't take place on that fateful night in the Ford Theater.
It doesn't.
No, it starts somewhere in what, late 1864, early 1865?
Yeah, on a train platform in New Jersey. Jersey City, New Jersey. 21-year-old Robert Lincoln was trying to buy himself a ticket for a train journey in a sleeper car. And he was part of a big crowd and was kind of smushed up against the idling train car waiting to get this ticket. And as the train began to move, he actually fell onto the platform, which is a fear. You know how they say mind the gap?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they mean. That's why they tell you to mind the gap. It's so things like this don't happen. But he was kind of being pushed up against it, and then he lost his footing, and he fell into the tracks. Thank God it wasn't like Subway where you hit that third rail and you're toast.
Right, yeah. But this still means that serious injury or death could be in the cards for the unlucky Robert Lincoln. Until that is, and imagine some inspiring, heroic music playing here, someone from the crowd reaches out and they grab Robert Lincoln by his collar and they haul him back up to safety. And Robert Lincoln turns around and who does he see but Edwin Booth, one of the most famous actors of the time. Robert Lincoln instantly recognizes Edwin Booth. This is, again, a few months before.
He recognizes him for his acting prowess.
Right, not for being related to the guy who will one day kill his father.
That's right. That would have required some sort of gift of sight, mm-hmm. which we have no record that he had.
It's strange because history tells us that Edwin, when he later learned that the man whose life he saved was Robert Lincoln, Edwin was pretty happy with that because his brother was a Confederate sympathizer, right? Not above assassination, which makes him functionally a terrorist. But Edwin was a New York resident, and he was a huge supporter of the Union cause. They had a pretty complex relationship. I mean, Edwin Booth voted for Abraham Lincoln in 1864, and his brother John Wilkes Booth was incredibly disappointed by his brother's vote, and he lectured him. And Edwin was 31 years old at the time of that election, but it was his first time voting, and he felt this amazing pride swell up inside him because he felt like he was finally doing what an American citizen is supposed to do. He wrote to his friend Emma F. Carey in November of 1864 saying, "I voted for Lincoln t'other day, that is T'other, the first vote I ever cast, and I suppose now I am an American citizen all over, as I have ever been in my heart." You'll hear he got a little Southern toward the end there.
Yeah.
Because he was moved.
Acting.
Acting. There he was. Hey, do you remember the first time you voted?
Yeah, I think I voted for, I think I did something stupid, like voted for Nader or something.
Why do you vote your conscience?
I don't know. They call that throwing away your vote, I think is what that's called. I don't know. I voted for some third party, like Green Party candidate or something. I can't remember who it was. It's irrelevant. Yeah, I do remember. It was in a high school gym. Not particularly remarkable. I guess that's where a lot of people vote.
Yeah, and you don't get anything when it's your first time voting, which I enjoyed it. I felt like I was doing the right thing. I always grew up very civic-minded. But I kind of thought, you know, someone would care that it was my first time voting. But the people at the counter where you register, they just wanted the day to be over. They were very nice, but it was a very long day.
What was it like back then? Did you punch the ticket? You punched it with like a little pen. Like a pokey thing on the front. Isn't that how it was?
Oh, in my day, you had to cut your hands and bleed out.
Ah, yes. Onto your candidate of choice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they mean when they say vote your conscience.
That's what they mean. That's where the phrase derives. But
you get a sticker though. Like, you do get something, but everyone gets that.
You always get a sticker.
That's true.
Even back in those days.
You ever thought about just getting the sticker and not actually voting?
You know. Okay, I'm going to share this with everyone. This is an unethical life hack tip that I have done for years. I routinely vote. I like the feeling of participating in these sorts of systems and institutions, but I don't put the sticker on. When I get the sticker, I keep it.
You stockpile stickers,
Ben? I stockpile stickers just in case I don't make it for a vote. I've never had to use it.
You just outed yourself, son.
Well, that's because I've never had to use it. I actually vote.
Okay, well, hook me up with some of those bad boys.
You want some stickers?
No, I'm a voter, dude. I'm a civic-minded guy, just like, you know, the best of us.
Yeah, yeah. Like Edwin Booth.
Edwin Booth, indeed. So here's the thing. I mean, Edwin Booth really was kind of beloved because, like you said, he was a union supporter, as were his parents, Junius and Mary. He was not anything like his much more fringy, what we look at now, looking back, more like terrorist-y kind of brother, John. And John was deeply disappointed that his brother voted for the union.
Yeah, this is strange. When we say deeply disappointed, we don't mean tisk, tisk, tut, tut. We mean that John Wilkes Booth apparently became livid and said something along the lines of, you fool, one day that man will make himself king of this country.
That's right. When we say the Union, of course, we mean Abraham Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And our star-crossed heroes for today's story, well, it might seem like an absolute coincidence, maybe not so much, right? There's a little bit more to the story, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we've run into this in the past. Sometimes you'll hear historical anecdotes that sound just too good, really, mm-hmm. to be true. And this may be one of the exceptions to that rule. We do know that it really happened. Maybe there's still some question about the particulars, but in a letter to the editor of Century Magazine, a guy named Richard Gilder in 1909, Robert Todd Lincoln himself tells the story of how Edwin Booth had saved his life. Gilder had wanted to know whether the story was true because it had already been written about a number of times up until that point, especially when Booth died in 1893. But the weird thing about it is, in those days, fact-checking was not prioritized as highly as it is today in theory. As a matter of fact, one could argue that we're getting back to the days where facts take the back seat to a good story. We have an excerpt from Robert Lincoln's version of the story of Edwin Booth saving his life.
And this recollection goes as follows. The incident occurred while a group of passengers were late at night purchasing their sleeping car places from the conductor, who stood on the station platform at the entrance of the car. Some intense descriptive language here, if I do say so myself. The platform was about the height of the car floor, and there was, of course, a narrow space, the gap, between the platform and the car body. There was some crowding, and I happened to be pressed by it against the car body while waiting my turn. This is amazing. This is so visceral. In this situation, the train began to move, and by the motion, I was twisted off my feet and had dropped somewhat with feet downward into the open space, and was personally helpless when my coat collar was vigorously seized and I was quickly pulled up out to a secure footing on the platform. Upon turning to thank my rescuer, I saw it was Edwin Booth, whose face was, of course, well known to me, and I expressed my gratitude to him and in doing so called him by name.
Which is a weird detail to end on, isn't it? He's like, and in doing so, called him by name.
Sure did.
Thank you, Edwin Booth.
Edwin Booth. My hero.
Were it not for your vigorous collar pull.
Yes, exactly. You understand what I'm saying, though? Like, the language is so over-the-top, erudite, and descriptive.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
So we can see the human moment shining through here. Like, imagine that you had something like this, because we've all been around subways before. So imagine that you are almost falling into the path of a subway, and all of a sudden someone yanks you from behind and saves your life, and you turn around and you realize, whoa, it's Sheryl Crow or something like that, you know? I'm just working in a Sheryl Crow reference here because it's been a while. Or it's the Quister, or it's, I don't know, Tom Hanks, somebody. You now have this great anecdote about a celebrity. And as we said, for a while, Edwin Booth had no idea that he had saved the life of one of Lincoln's children. He just thought he was being a stand-up dude. He didn't find out about it until he received a letter from a Colonel Adam Badeau, a friend of Booth's. And Robert Lincoln had told the colonel this story. And both Robert Lincoln and Badeau were members of General Grant's staff at the time. So here's the question. This is a little bit of myth-busting. We hate to be the party poopers in the room, but the truth is important. Did Booth's action really qualify as saving Robert Lincoln's life? Lincoln backed away from his claims a little bit later in his years, and he said that the train had come to a stop when he fell, so he was only in danger of falling from the platform to the ground. And he said, I probably would have been injured, but I wouldn't have been seriously injured. Not that I'm not grateful. I'm very grateful, and I love this story. It's an amazing, you know, it's an amazing thing to tell people when I'm hanging out at dinner parties. So maybe it was a little bit exaggerated in the beginning, but you know what wasn't exaggerated? The troubles Edwin Booth encountered after his brother shot the president.
So after the assassination, dude, they had to have seen it coming a little bit. I mean, this guy was obviously espousing all of this anti-union rhetoric, and he was clearly the black sheep of the family. But his actions, John Wilkes Booth's actions at that theater, absolutely dragged his family name through the mud. They were all, by proxy, persona non grata. He lost his brother, you know, actually, the life of his brother, lost his candidate, his president, this man who he truly believed in, and he essentially was almost personally ruined because no one wanted to touch him with a 10-foot pole because he had the stink of his brother's treason all over him, right?
His engagement got canceled.
Yeah.
The family of his fiancée forced her to break it off.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. And he was, quote, stricken to the ground, and only with time and aid of his friends was he able to make a recovery. It's strange because what they're describing sounds like anywhere from a nervous breakdown to deep, deep depression. He was essentially on suicide watch for a while.
Yeah. And even though he and his parents had absolutely nothing to do with his brother's actions, ideologically couldn't have been further away from him, they were actually arrested by federal officials. And the public just treated them like lepers, you know, all because of what John Wilkes Booth did. And this is immediately after he was identified as the assassin. What a rough lot, man. Like, you know.
It's terrible.
Guilt by association.
It's, exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
That's it.
Edwin eventually makes it back in the stage and tries to resurrect his career about 8 months after the assassination, which may have been a little too soon, you think?
Oh, for sure.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the time limit on that would be, but he came back in January of 1866. And while Edwin was trying to put the pieces back together, his family withdrew from public life for years and years and years, and they continued to live with this black mark on their social record, I guess, their socio-political record, for the rest of their lives, despite being ardent supporters of Lincoln and the Union. While this is still happening, while all this is happening on one hand, on the other hand, Edwin is on a mission to get his brother's remains so that they can bury him at the family plot.
Yeah. Pretty sad story.
Mm-hmm. And it takes 3 years for him to get those remains released.
I mean, he's still his brother, you know?
Still his brother.
They grew up together. They loved each other. I mean, obviously there was some distance between them, but there's nothing that indicates that anybody in their family suspected that he would do anything as radical as he did. And we do have some documentation about the way that John's Confederate leanings kind of put a wedge between him and his family members.
Oh, I love the language in this one. So he's writing a letter to a guy named Nahum Capon, N-A-H-U-M, Capon, in 1881. This is what we're talking about, right, where he's describing his brother?
Yeah.
Okay, so all things aside, the language of this is amazing. Dear sir, I can give you very little information regarding my brother John. I seldom saw him since early boyhood in Baltimore. He was a rattle-pated fellow, filled with quixotic notions. While at the farm in Maryland, he would charge on horseback through the woods, spouting heroic speeches with a lance in his hand, a relic of the Mexican War, given to father by some soldier who had served under Taylor. We regarded him as a good-hearted, harmless, though wild-brained boy, and used to laugh at his patriotic froth whenever secession was discussed. That he was insane on that one point, no one who knew him well can doubt. Mm. What does rattle-pated mean?
Is it like being Twitter-pated?
Is it, yeah, like, so a pate would be, what, like your head?
But isn't Twitter-pated a thing?
Yeah, Twitter-pated is when you're very excited.
When you're excited. Rattle-pated means you're very rattled, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the context? How's it used here? Yeah, okay, so he was a rattle-pated fellow with quixotic notions. So I guess that would mean quirky, lofty ideals, kind of. So maybe rattle-pated
scatterbrained
means, maybe it just means kind of a freaking weirdo.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe a little, like, jittery. That's what the word makes me think of.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
On edge, right? Like prone to wild outbursts and quixotic notions.
According to my very cursory search, it means lacking discretion.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I like it though.
I love it.
I don't know if I could pull that off in conversation.
Yeah, you might get called out on that one.
Well, because then you would have to explain it, and then people would say why, and then we would say, well, you know, me and my pals do this show on the internet, and I'm trying to bring back archaic curse words.
Mm.
I don't know.
Then they'll just like be like, you're going to have to go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a $25 word.
Yeah.
In fact, you should have to pay $25 for the privilege of using that word. But I love it in theory.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? Someone else will be able to bring back rattle-pated. No, maybe this just isn't our fight. But we do know that when he was talking about his brother, you can see the affection that he felt, and you can see the distance. And the rest of his letter, which is a little long to read here, is him explaining how that politics drove a wedge between them, and also how little he felt they knew each other in the end. He always thinks of him as that poor, crazy boy.
That poor, crazy, rattle-pated boy.
Rattle-pated, that's right. And thus ends our episode, but not our show. You're right, Noel. We have been establishing a little bit of a pattern of looking at lesser-known relatives of historical figures. I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it, too. Have we reached 200 episodes yet?
You know what? We were talking about this. Did we ever talk about this on air?
I don't know if we did or not.
Okay, because I know I was
we're eking up on it. We're eking up? Eking?
Eking.
We're eking up on it.
We're getting to the precipice. This might be 201. I'm not sure.
Because I think Casey pointed out that we had released a few creature feature features in the feed, which upped our number, but we're not going to count those towards our total, I don't think. So I think
we should do something fun.
Yeah, like what?
I don't know. Like
wear fun hats.
Go to Dave and Buster's.
Do a live podcast from Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, go to a history museum. I love the New York Museum of Natural History. That's a great one.
I haven't been to that one in a long time.
It's great.
Check it out.
It's a whole...
We can celebrate separately.
Okay,
I think we're both on the road. We're going to be doing a little traveling together.
That's
and
true.
And then you're off. I'm not going to spill the beans on this one, but you got a serious adventure coming up, don't you?
I got a lot of stuff I got to do. Got to go home.
Involving sonar.
Pack my socks.
And your sonar.
And my sonar, yes. But all will be revealed in time. The conversation doesn't have to stop here. We want to hear your favorite lesser-known relatives or associates of historical figures. You can tell us about it on Facebook. You can tell us about it on Instagram. You can tell us about it on Twitter. We especially like to recommend our community page, Ridiculous Historians.
Yeah, it's a great place to catch up with your fellow listeners and get up on the latest history memes or the oldest history memes. Really, there's no cutoff for history memes, except for us, 1994?
Yeah, 19...
ish, the 90s.
90s, let's just say the 90s.
Everything newer than that is not history to us, anyway, on this year's show. But yeah, if you can also check us out on social media. We're Ridiculous History on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that. But most of the fun happens on our personal social feeds. Mine is at @HowNowNoelBrown.
And I am at Ben Bolin on Instagram. I am at Ben Bolin HSW on Twitter. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Casey Pegram. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed that stone cold hit you hear at the top of every show.
Big thanks to our super research associate, Gabe Luzier, and Ryan Barish, who has been on the show a couple of times, was kind of helping us out as part of a summer, like a work study kind of situation, right? For his degree.
Yeah, that's right. That's why Ryan has such an authoritative scholarly air, because he is a scholar.
He is indeed a scholar, whereas we are armchair scholars at best.
Rattle-pated.
We are rattle-pated, fake Herman Miller Aron chair scholars. That's what we are. But we have a really good time doing it. We're going to miss Ryan, but we're going to definitely have him back.
Have to.
Those were some fun episodes. So thanks to you, Ryan. Here's to you. And here's to your master's degree in history.
Yes, congratulations. Casey, could we get a wild applause cue? Yes, thank you for classing up the show, Ryan. Thanks, as always, friends of the show, Eves Jeffcoat, Christopher Hasiotis, and to Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister.
I feel like we're going to be hearing from him pretty soon. Our time is up.
I felt a fell wind as I was walking into the studio.
Yeah, something wicked definitely this way comes. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.